I'm David.
And I'm Matt.
And you're listening to the Mastering Mondays podcast. Welcome to the Mastering Mondays podcast, brought to you by No More Bad Mondays. Today, we're thrilled to have Todd Clint, a SharePoint expert with an impressive 12 Microsoft MVP awards and a renowned authority in Microsoft administration. If you want to check your tech practices are up to scratch, especially within SMBs and educational settings, this episode is a must listen. Todd, it's great to have you with us.
It's great to be here. And wherever I had my bio up that said I had 12 MVP awards, they just renewed that here a couple of weeks ago. I'm up to 19.
19?
19. I'm not even making that number up, but I would do that. So yeah, so Shane and I, the pressure's on. We're both at 19. Your previous guest, or a couple guests ago, Shane Young, we're both at 19. So we really got to be on our best behavior this year because we want to hit 20 next year. So we're really buckling down this year.
So if one of you doesn't make it.
That's a good question. So I was awarded in July of, well, I guess 2005, if it's 20 years next year. Shane was awarded in October of 2004. So he had it 9 months longer than me. And so for the longest time, he would lord that over my head that he's like, you could make a whole person in the amount of time that I've been an MVP longer than Todd. But then they rejiggered the program here a few years ago and rounded it up and moved everybody's renewals to July 1st. And so now him and I are exactly the same. So he lost that edge and it's haunted him ever since. I'm not going to lie. I was with him last week. It still pains him that he can't hold that over my head anymore. So there would be much, to answer your question, there would be much bragging, much, well, when you've been an MVP as long as I have, all that kind of stuff. Oh yeah.
Me and Dave are neck and neck at the moment at zero. So yeah, it's on.
Oh, the pressure is on. Yeah. Well, and for the listeners out there that don't know what the MVP program is, I always take a minute when I speak at conferences and things like that. I like to tell folks what the MVP program is because it's a mysterious sort of thing. It doesn't mean I'm the smartest person in the room. And that generally is true for any room I'm in any context. But what it means is the people that have been awarded the MVP award are people who are out in the community doing things, helping out, putting on conferences, speaking at conferences, posting online answers on Reddit, that kind of stuff, Stack Exchange. And so if you see somebody as an MVP, they are a good person to ask about technology. Because once you pull that cord and get them to start talking about whatever they're passionate about, they will be infinitely helpful. So that's what I like to think of when I get the MVP award. It's just a reminder that I get that for helping other people and for being helpful out in the community. And so if you see that, that's what those people are doing.
In addition to your consultancy work, and as you just mentioned, you're frequently speaking at major tech events like the SharePoint conference, Tech Ed at Night. Can you share with us your story of your career journey? How did you build your expertise and ultimately end up where you are now?
Yeah, so it's one of those things where I don't know that I chose the career. I think the career sort of chose me in that I was always a nerd. Like growing up, I was the kid that got stuffed in his locker all the time and stuff like that. So when the computer industry finally caught up to my innate skills, because it's not important to understand how old I am, but there's some catching up to do there. But when I got to college, I was going to go into electrical engineering, but then that's when the internet was starting to come out. And so kind of got invested in that and got good at that. So it was kind of always there with my skill set. My dad worked for Motorola and he fixed electronics. And so there was always that stuff. I remember when I was probably 3 years old, our television, our telly, to your British listeners, broke, and Dad had ripped it apart. And I remember being just tall enough that if I pulled myself up, I could see across the table, and like there's just pieces of television everywhere. And I remember thinking, I will never watch cartoons again. Like this is it. It was a good run, and he got it all. He fixed the problem. He got it all put back together. So that was the environment that I grew up in. It was just fixing complicated things. And so it just made sense with the generation that I grew up in that I would get into the computer industry. And so then when it came to the Microsoft stuff, I'm not sure how I just kind of fell into that. That was the predominant operating system when I was in college and things like that. And then for SharePoint specifically, I remember it was a fun day at the office. The company that I worked for was a small company. They'd just been gobbled up by a big company. And my new boss, who of course I wanted to impress and not get fired by and all that, came down and said, "Hey, we've got all these servers on all of your locations and all of our locations. We need to put together a website that catalogs all of these servers and when their warranties expire and where they're at and serial numbers and all this kind of stuff. If you could do that, that would be great." So the problem with that was my skills weren't in web design or anything like that. So I thought I was kind of done for, like I was going to have to start working on my frying skills or flipping hamburgers or something. But I had recently been to a Microsoft event somewhere and they'd given us the Office XP CD and it had the SharePoint Team Services 1.0, thing on it. And I'm like, well, 2 weeks ago they were telling us how this could do anything. Let's find out if it can save my fledgling career here. And so I installed that and got everything going and got all the server stuff up and there was cheering everywhere. And so from that point on, I became the SharePoint guy. And then just so happened that the company that I worked for built some software and the next version that they built sat on top of SharePoint. And so the developers in the company and all that were talking to IT and they're like, we need a SharePoint guy. We need somebody who understands SharePoint. And my boss was like, have I got the guy for you? And so that's how SharePoint and I, that's how my wagon got hitched to the SharePoint horse. And it's been a pretty good ride for the last 20 some years. So ran in production every version of on-prem SharePoint, starting with SharePoint Team Services 1.0 up through Subscription Edition.
So you and SharePoint have grown up together, as it were.
Yes.
So where do you see SharePoint going to in the medium term? Because, I mean, to give you an example, when you use Copilot now, it will generate tables and data structures in Dataverse.
Yeah.
It's in Dataverse. And what are SharePoint lists for now that Dataverse can do it all and it's the kind of platform of choice for Copilot?
Right. So I think that's an important question to analyze because one of my coworkers, Mark Anderson, he's a big fan of what he calls the maturity model. And it's this idea, it's something that we've all known about. It's the whole crawl, walk, run, philosophy on doing anything, home repair, whatever. That the right solution at one phase of your skill set might not be the right solution for every phase of your skill set. And so I remember, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, something like that, it looked like SharePoint was going to die out again because, of different technologies that Microsoft had. And here we are 10 years later still talking about it. So I think... SharePoint is, they're kind of positioning it now as the undercarriage for a lot of other services. So Microsoft has this service called Microsoft Lists, where you can create lists of things and create forms on these lists. You know what that is in the background? Well, that's a SharePoint list. And then Microsoft here within the last year, I can't remember when, maybe last fall, released this thing called SharePoint Embedded, where it's basically a SharePoint site without the UI. So that you can use all of the mechanics of SharePoint, the permissioning and the logic and all that kind of stuff without having to know anything about SharePoint and without anybody being able to get into SharePoint, the UI and muck things up. So I think depending on what your project is and where you are in the maturity model with different technologies, certainly Dataverse, is a great platform for if you really want to get into the nuts and bolts of things. But if you're, if you've got more skills in another area and you just want to work on the top, the higher level, higher up the stack, maybe the SharePoint Embedded, the SharePoint lists, things like that are better. The other thing is SharePoint is just an amazing collaborative environment. And if all you want to do is collaborate on documents and take advantage of all of the great search and all that, you would never want to reinvent all of that and have it sit on top of Dataverse. You would want to take advantage of all the hard work SharePoint team's done. And they have done tremendous, great mobile support and all that. Things you would just never want to have to do by hand, SharePoint will do for you.
Yeah, so that was a very good point. Yeah, SharePoint is so wide, isn't it? That even if elements of it become less used, there is that core that is extremely useful for almost everything. It's the perfect intranet, as far as I'm concerned.
It's amazing, and it's been funny watching the product evolve and just seeing how that's gotten better and better over the years. Like sometimes it just brings a tear to my eye. My baby's all grown up now. And it does mobile well. There was a few versions of SharePoint that said they did mobile, but let's be honest, they didn't do it well. And then how great search has become and all the amazing things you can do with search, and now with Copilot being built in. So I'm really proud of where SharePoint's gone. It's kind of tougher to keep track of now because it's on, you know, the focus is SharePoint Online. So there's no version number. So you can't say when SharePoint 2016, they added this and that was great, because now it's, they just kind of trickle those things in. But it has been, you know, every time they announce something, every time there's a conference, I just love to see what crazy things they've added to SharePoint, next.
Well, I for one am very glad that there are no versions, and there's no kind of moving up a version, and you know all of that horror.
Yeah, well, I tell you, I kind of miss that. So one of the ways that I really spent a lot of my time as a consultant was doing upgrades, because they were always so horrible and hairy. But yeah, now that everybody's online, there's not so much of that to do anymore. Now there's still migrations, which are kind of like the upgrade, you know, that skill set pulls forward. But there were some really fun problems that I had to solve in my earlier days because of decisions that Microsoft would make about the platform, or horrible, horrible things that customers had done to SharePoint in a previous version, and then they wanted to move that horrible thing forward to the next version. It was a lot of fun to do those things, and so I kind of miss that sometimes.
So one thing I'm certainly guilty of is not keeping my SharePoint libraries and drives tidy. I'm sure it's a common struggle.
Yeah.
And I've certainly seen it with the businesses and education providers that I've worked with. So, you know, perhaps you're too busy, you haven't got your files organized, and things can get a mess quite quickly. What are your top strategies for keeping content relevant and well organized?
Well, I think that's an important thing. And yes, Matt, you are in good company. And I'll tell you, so I'm involved in a bunch of like nonprofit organizations here in town, and some of them use Google stuff online. I don't like it. I wash my hands every time after I use it. It feels very dirty. But Google gives, you know, nonprofits free stuff, and I get it, schools and all that. But just had this exact same conversation with one of those 3 days ago. They're like, our Google Drive is a mess. We can't find anything. So it is not only you and everybody that uses Microsoft 365. It is you and everybody who uses cloud, you know, drive services in general. So I would say, before I get to my recommendations, I would say that it's incredibly important. Platform hygiene is incredibly important. Not only does it just look good, like if you've got even an ounce of OCD in you, just seeing those well-structured files and all that just feels so good. But you know, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, maybe, we started telling folks that it was really important that you get your stuff in order because of search. Because search would use things like URLs and you know, distance from different other files to determine relevancy. And if your file share was a mess, then search couldn't work as well. And so I don't know how many people we won over with that, but it always seemed like a pretty compelling argument. And now we've got AI. So now as AI is trying to figure things out, and we're asking it questions about our documents and things like that, it does the same thing. So having stuff in a good place, having it in folders that make sense, or having metadata that makes sense, is an important thing. So that's definitely something folks should do. So what are the strategies? Well, there's a lot of different strategies. And again, it depends on where you're at in that maturity model and where your organization's at in that maturity model. I think having good information architecture, good IA, will help folks know where things go. And that can mean having lots of sites. So a lot of folks who are especially not real familiar with SharePoint kind of get nervous at the idea of having tens or hundreds of SharePoint sites, because it seems like a management nightmare. But in reality, if you're a big enough organization, that's what makes the most sense. And so kind of sitting down and, you know, watching some videos on YouTube or talking to a consultant like me or somebody and getting a good information architecture, how should we break up our sites? How should that look? And then inside of those sites, what should our document libraries look like? Should we just have one document library and throw everything in there because we're at that maturity level 100? We just don't have that much. It doesn't, you know, the return's just not there. The juice isn't worth the squeeze, as the kids say these days. Or are you at the spot where you would benefit from having a couple of different document libraries because you want to have content types here that don't show up there, things like that. So talking to somebody and understanding information architecture a little bit is a good help. Once you get that figured out, then there are all kinds of tools inside of SharePoint that you can use to mold your data. So I would tell folks not to have a lot of folders. I will allow you to have one level of folders in your document library without judgment. But once you start having more than that, then I start raising the eyebrow and being like, I don't know. So maybe one level of folders, but then you're probably asking yourself, well, if I can't have folders, Todd, how do I organize my data? Well, now we have things like metadata. And so you have metadata tags. And the brilliant thing about metadata tags is you can have more than one. A file can only be in one folder, but you can have multiple metadata tags, and they're easy to change. They're easier to change than moving a file around inside of folders. So start looking at that. How, you know, if any place I see a big group of folders, I ask myself, how could this be metadata instead? And generally, if I can get the customer on board, that works out better. So look at metadata. Content types, I mentioned that. So content types are kind of like content templates, sort of, you know, document templates. So you might have an invoice content type, you might have a, you know, something like that. And so once you have those kind of things, then you can start doing, you know, search and AI and all that can tell what kind of content is inside of there. It gives it kind of a hint. And then you can do things like add metadata to those content types. One of the fun things that SharePoint Online does now is you can have folder colors. So I like to do that. I like to color my folders. I'm tired of the old yellow. So I like the folder colors. That's really not an IA thing. But there's that. And the other thing is just education and understanding that inside of your organization, there will always be new people. And so be patient with those folks. So you'll get that. You could have the greatest IA in place and have everything structured perfectly and have all of your employees trained to use it. And the next week they're going to hire somebody else who doesn't know how to use it. And they're going to put stuff in the wrong place. So you just got to kind of lead them by the hand a little bit, give them lots of education, lots of love, lots of pats on the head when they do good stuff. But keeping that conversation, it's not a destination. It's a journey, and just keep folks excited about moving stuff and putting it in the right place. And I guess that's my best advice on that.
So should everyone in the organization have the ability to create groups, folders, sites, and I guess even share information? Or should this be limited in some way?
So that is a great question. And that is one of those, I don't know what you have over in the UK, but in the US, we have things like, you know, are you a Coke person or a Pepsi person? Are you a Ford person or a Chevy person? So there's definitely those two camps inside of SharePoint, is the locking it down so that nobody can do anything, or the Wild West where anybody can do anything and we'll clean it up later. We're not worried about that. I fall closer to the latter. And that's because at the heart of it all, I'm fairly lazy. And so the more stuff the end users can do for themselves, the less I have to do. I can go back to emailing my mom or playing solitaire or whatever I'm, you know, busying myself with that day. So I lean more that direction. The other reason that I lean that direction is because while I know a fair amount about the underpinnings of SharePoint, I'm not always the biggest expert on everybody's workflow, everybody's processes, how they use data, how they interact with each other during the day. They are. And so even if they're doing dumb things inside of SharePoint, like creating lots and lots and lots of folders that just make me cringe, that tells me that they're part of their process that makes sense. So while we don't need to allow them to have all those folders, I can look at those folders and learn what they're doing and then come back and give them a better solution. But I can't learn that if they don't have the ability to make those mistakes. And so I generally let folks do whatever. Now, I like to give some guardrails. So things like you mentioned groups. So you can set things inside of Microsoft 365 that say, you know, groups have to have two owners. If they don't have any activity every, you know, 90 days, they get deleted. Those kind of things. Get those guardrails in place so that it doesn't get too crazy. But then for the most part, I try to let people go and do what they want to do. Because at the end of the day, as an IT person, my job is to make it so other people can do their job. And every time I say no, or I put a barrier in place to something they want to do, I'm potentially making it tougher for them to do their job. And I don't want to do that.
So if we talk about small to medium size businesses, and we're moving really into kind of governance of the Microsoft 365 tenant and more things along those lines. You know, small to medium businesses, they've got quite limited IT resources. You know, you may be doing a number of different jobs, one of which is actually acting as admin for your tenant. What are the critical aspects that people in that situation should focus on? Because, you know, governance isn't their full-time job. They don't have a lot of time to really research it. You know, what strategies should they employ to make sure that their business is safe?
Yeah, that's a great question, because a lot of folks, they are the IT guy. So anything that has, or IT person, I guess, anything that has an on-off switch or a blue LED is under their purview. And so that means, you know, they run the printers, the coffee pot. Oh, and they happen to manage the entire Microsoft 365 tenant. Yeah, we catch that all the time. So I would pivot the question a little bit. I would say if I was giving one of those kind of people advice, information architecture would likely be the second thing I would worry about, but I would make sure that my security is locked down really tight. The bad guys are badder than ever now, and you don't have to try very hard to find articles anywhere about what bad guys have done lately. So if I was, you know, if somebody was coming to me, a nascent M365 admin, and they were like, what should I learn? I just got thrown into this role. What do I need to know? I would send them articles on, you know, enabling multi-factor authentication and all the different ways that that can be done. And even now, it's to the point where with all the SIM hijacking and all that, you can't just turn on MFA. You have to know what you're doing when you turn on MFA, and you have to be able to roll it out. You have to support it. You have to be able to help those users who frantically are trying to get in and can't. So things like that. I would make them aware of sharing and just how data can get exfiltrated out of your organization, the places you can find where things are shared, the different rules you can set up around sharing. Auditing, those kind of things. So that would be kind of the low thing I would say for somebody who's also managing printers and you know, scanners and all those kind of things.
And is that where to a degree, you know, your statement that actually sometimes having a multitude of SharePoint sites is the best thing to do? Because of course, if your information is split up into all these different sites and you've got your memberships correct, then your risks are reduced somewhat by doing that.
Oh, absolutely. I don't know how many times we have been to a place where they have like one big site collection and a bunch of webs, not that you can really make webs anymore, and then a bunch of document libraries, and they've given somebody permission one place and didn't realize that it cascaded down to all these other places. Yeah, and when I would used to do SharePoint admin talks like at conferences, I don't do as much of that anymore, but I would talk about how the site or site collection, depending on when you get into SharePoint, is like the barrier for permissions. And there's just no way, there's no permission I can give anybody in one site that will, you know, give them access to data in another site. So yeah, if you have multiple sites, that is one way to make sure that if anybody, you know, leaks any data out, you know exactly who it is, or who, if anybody accesses any data, you know exactly where you can look to see who they are. So yeah, that's the security aspect of sites is a great reason to go with them.
Do you have any cautionary tales of examples where things have gone terribly wrong?
In SharePoint in general, I have them as long as my arm. I'm trying to think. So there's been a couple. One of them, and this is one of my favorites because it's one that I did, was way back in the day. I think this was SharePoint 2003 or SharePoint 2007. I told you all that the company that I worked for had a product that sat on top of SharePoint. And so we had our production bank of servers that were out in California. And then I had a test environment in Iowa where I'm at. And then we had obviously had a WAN connection to all of our offices. So I learned a valuable lesson this day. We got a new copy of our software that needed to be upgraded on our test environment. So I had created our test environment months before, and I'd been kind of lazy. I was using all VMs, so I just copied the VMs over and then, you know, jiggled a couple of the names to make it work in my Iowa data center. And then I ran the install and for our software to upgrade our software that sat on top of SharePoint, and then I went to lunch. So lesson number one on that was, you know, when you're replicating environments, be very careful because of something that's going to show up here later. And number two, if you start a big upgrade, don't start it and then leave. like maybe sit and watch it for a little bit. So this upgrade should have taken 10, 15 minutes, something like that. I don't know. But me and my buddies are out at lunch, and I see an email come through, and it's from a user, and they're having problems. But users always have problems. Like, those guys are the worst. So then I see another email, and it's got an error message in it. And I'm like, well, I know what causes that error message, but boy, I don't know of anything we're doing that could possibly be causing that. And then I got a call from my boss. He's like, SharePoint is down. It is DED dead. I don't know what you're doing, but this is more important than that. And I'm like, okay, all right. So I get back to my desk, and I had a two monitor setup back then. And I, you know, control delete, I unlock my screen. And in one screen, after, you know, 45 minutes or an hour or so, The upgrade is still running, which should have been done, you know, long time ago. And then the other screen is a, you know, a SharePoint page. It's like service not available or something like that. And I'm looking at those. I'm like, I'm not a big believer in coincidences. Like these two things are likely related. And so what I figured out after a bunch of investigation was when our software installed, I pointed it at my SQL server because SharePoint's all SQL on the back end. I pointed it at my SQL server and I thought I was answering the question, what's the only SQL server that I should touch? And so I pointed it at the Iowa SQL server. In reality, what the question that I was answering was, give me one SQL server and I will look in every nook and cranny for a server anywhere and I will update all of the servers that I can find. And so what I had done was I had updated the software on my SharePoint servers, but updated the databases on the other farm. And so nothing would render. It was down for another 8 or 9 hours as I'm trying to figure out, you know, backups and it took me probably 30 minutes to figure out what was going on. And the other thing that was funny was, again, we wrote that software. So I start panicking. Because I realized that whatever has happened, whatever mysterious thing's going on, it's all my fault. And I'm talking to my coworker and I'm like, you know, there's the main developer, go find him wherever he's at. Like I need him right now because I needed to bounce some of this off him to figure out what was going on. And so this guy, this lead developer is in a conference with some folks, like some customers or something. And my coworker runs into the room and everybody stops and they're looking at him. And he points to the developer. He's like, I need you. He's like, Todd's freaking out in his office and he's calling for you. I don't know what's going on. So, and it's very much, you know, so at the time of the recording of this, we've just gone through the CrowdStrike, you know, issue with the testing and all that kind of stuff. And, that's a lesson that I learned 100 years ago, test, because this, and it, my coworkers are great. So it took, you know, probably 8 or 9 hours to get that fixed. And then I had to go back and replay some logs to get some stuff back. My coworkers were sliding things like McDonald's applications under my door, things like that. They were very supportive of, another one that was fun to me was, this was again, back in the SharePoint 2007 days. We had a customer call us up. This was when Shane and I were working together at a consulting company and their SharePoint server was slow. And so we get into their SharePoint server and it is slow. Boy, it is, you know, we look at the specs on the machine and it should be good enough. And we're looking at SharePoint and it's up to date and it's configured correctly. And then we're looking around and there's an icon that I don't recognize in the system tray for the server. And turns out somebody had installed the iTunes server on their SharePoint server because, you know, it was the most powerful server in their company. So they had loaded this poor server up with iTunes and, you know, hundreds of gigabytes of MP3s and everybody in the office is streaming off of it. That there's your problem. I think we got it. So there's just been a ton of stuff. It's been a fun ride. SharePoint is so complicated that there are so many different ways to break it in spectacular fashion. I've really enjoyed, I feel like I almost should have one of those Sherlock Holmes Deerslayer hats to wear sometimes when I'm trying to figure out what went wrong. Cause it's like solving a mystery every time.
When it comes to auditing Microsoft 365, what tools should businesses and education providers become familiar with? What are the tools and how can they benefit the organization?
Yeah. So that's one thing that I think, so I talked about, you know, before, security would be the first thing that I would tell folks. I think either the second thing or as part of the first thing I would tell them about auditing, because that is one way, it's somewhat proactive, but when things go wrong, it's good to be able to look back and see who has access to something, or, you know, if a file's gotten exfiltrated, it's good to be able to see who did that. By default, I believe it's still audit log entries are kept for 90 days inside of M365. And so you're right, Matt, we want to have some software that sits on top of there and does something, archives it, makes better sense of it, something like that. So I think my number one product that I probably recommend to folks, and this is an all over admin product, it's not just for security things, but there's a company in Croatia called Syskit, S-Y-S-K-I-T. And they founded by a couple of buddies of mine. So I'm very, you know, partial to them. But they make some great admin tools. And one of the things they let you do is look at auditing and shape and shift. And one of the things you want to look for in a good auditing tool is the ability for it to go in and pull those audit events off so that when day 91 or 93 rolls around, you can still look at things. So I really like the Syskit package, and it does a bunch of things. It does, you know, sharing, and it lets you do administration and reporting, all that fun stuff. They're great folks. Another one that I like is kind of an odd one. Anybody who's been in the SharePoint space for a while will recognize the name. ShareGate is a great company. ShareGate is best known for their migration tools, but they also have some great admin tools as well. And so that will let folks go in and do some auditing and look at permissions and look at file stuff. So whenever people come to me and ask for things, Syskit or ShareGate are the two that I default to when I'm trying to help folks out.
Okay, Todd, I've got a question for you here. You can find almost anything on YouTube, and I've heard you say that governance and provisioning can actually be enjoyable when managed in the cloud. Now that might be hard to believe, but just talking about provisioning specifically, how should SMBs approach those processes, you know, to make sure that they feel safe and that they're being efficient? Because, of course, you know, provisioning, we're talking about, you know, if it's AI, we're talking about, you know, messages back and forth. We might be talking about, cores and transaction numbers and all sorts of stuff, which is probably out of the comfort zone of most SMB, people managing in an SMB environment, where they'd be thinking, hey, you know, I just want to buy a license, right? You know, so how should they approach that? Because it's a different world, isn't it?
So are you talking about provisioning AI stuff in general, or provisioning SharePoint in general, or what? Where's your
anything where your spend is not relating to a license, which might last you a year, where you know what your costs are, but where you're actually almost buying resource. And that resource may vary depending on how your employees use it and all that kind of stuff. Because that's becoming more commonplace now. Obviously, particularly with AI, where if you're in Copilot Studio and you're saying, well, I got this number of credits, you know, for my 200 quid, but, you know, if it really takes off, or if I've structured my chatbot terribly, then, you know, every conversation takes like 50 to and fro's to get a meaningful answer. You know, there are risks here, aren't there?
That's a tough one. And I haven't gotten to do that one a lot. I think that's we're early days on that. And I think we can learn a little bit from the Power Platform folks. So I know the first time I really had to look at that was in the context of Power Automate. So depending on how you license Power Automate, and depending on how Power Automate was licensed the month that you licensed Power Automate, because they moved that stuff around a lot, you could get into that situation where somebody would make some great whiz-bang tool and everybody would use it, and the next month you'd get a 200 quid bill for it. So for that one, we really, kind of a couple of things that we did for that was we put somebody in charge of that, essentially. So there was somebody who, not in charge of billing per se, but was in charge of keeping track of Power Apps and all that. For AI, the couple of times that I've run into that, really what that's come down to is we have caught it before we have pushed things out. And so for the example that you gave about, you know, it takes 50 turns in the conversation, the tokens are just flying all over the place. We caught that early on and realized that that was just not an efficient, you know, the way we had trained that AI model and the instructions we had given it weren't efficient enough. And so we were able to go back and catch that. I'll be honest, I haven't done enough with AI yet to have good guidance on how to keep track of that. But I think you bring up a good point, Dave, that is something we do need to keep track of, because these tools are going to explode if they haven't exploded already. And I know one buddy of mine, I haven't worked on his system, but he works for a fairly big organization, and they pay in the six figures every month for their Azure spend. And it's not all AI, but that's a big chunk of it. And for them, it's a little bit about the governance and making sure that they're getting their money's worth, but a lot about just being able to justify to the bean counters, this is what we're spending, but wait, here's what we're getting for it, which is also another important part of that.
Yeah, it's another side of the equation, isn't it? When, you know, everyone's talking about how much more efficient we can become with AI, but, you know, if you're carrying the same workforce and you're incurring this additional expense, it isn't the whole story by any means.
Yeah. And it's, so my wife is a CFO, And so I get to hear all the horror stories she talks about. And it's funny, being in IT, you know, the bean counters are the mortal enemy, because we want to buy more servers, we want to buy more services, you know, all this kind of stuff. And they're always telling us no, and they're so mean. But then I get to hear her stories like, oh, I can't believe IT's asking for this. Can you believe this? And so I think that story right now is very interesting to hear. And I think we're at kind of the uncomfortable stage. I think it's going to get a little, I don't want to say worse, but we're going to understand it not so well before we finally get the value out of it. Because you're exactly right. If I'm paying for the same number of employees and I'm getting the same work done, but now I'm paying for twice as many services in Azure, something's got to give somewhere. And so I think we haven't quite figured out yet, you know, how that value is going to be accounted for. But I think we're going to get there. And it's interesting, just yesterday, I was listening to a podcast about the Luddite movement, which took place over there in England, when the weavers were losing their jobs to the machines and General Ludd was breaking things and all that. And they were kind of likening it to, that's sort of where we're at now with AI. Like, people are mad at AI because AI is stealing jobs. And I would argue that AI is probably stealing fewer jobs than the Luddite, you know, the weavers and all that back then. But it's a very real thing that folks need to be aware of. But I think it's going to be less that AI is going to steal jobs. I think more the risk is that somebody who understands AI better than you is going to steal your job. And I think that's an imperative to all of us, to get comfortable, if not with developing AI, but with using AI, and just getting comfortable with the fact that that's what's on the other end of the conversation.
Yeah, as somebody who's spent recently a little bit of time in Copilot Studio trying to train a model to understand some kind of technical documents, yeah, there's a way to go before all the jobs have disappeared.
Yeah, but it's funny, because you and I, we've done the same thing. So my first thought was, I've got all these great documents and I want to ingest it. And it was to Matt's point earlier about, you know, the governance, all that, the documents themselves weren't structured in such a way that AI could read it and make the sense of it that I wanted. And I remember thinking at the time, like, yeah, we got a ways to go before we're all unemployed. Yep. Yep, I'm with you, but I'm generally optimistic, and it might be because of where I'm at in my career and where I'm at, you know, what I do for a job. But I'm generally optimistic that AI is going to open up a whole bunch of things, and I think it's going to happen faster. I think we're going to hit the bottom and then come out on top a lot faster than we have with previous technologies. So hopefully, anybody who's negatively impacted by that will get out pretty quickly, and I would feel better about that.
You've given loads of advice to businesses and education providers. I'm going to ask for one more. So if you give one piece of advice for any business or any education provider using Microsoft, using the ecosystem, perhaps using SharePoint, what would it be?
I think my advice on that is kind of my advice to people in general, and that is, be curious. And what I mean by that in the context that you've given me, Matt, is when new things come out, be curious about them. Look and see if they will help you out. Microsoft's not in the business of creating technology that nobody wants to use. And so if something has made it to the point where the average person has seen it from Microsoft, there's a good chance there's some value in there somewhere. And so if you have the time and if you have the ability, when you see something that is new to you inside of SharePoint, or this whole Copilot Studio comes out and you're like, what's, I see Copilot everywhere. Where, what is Copilot Studio? Be curious and see if it's something that can help you out. That's something that I'm just generally curious. Like, I'm the little kid that tore everything he had apart because I wanted to see how it worked. Sometimes even got it put back together. Those were the good days. But I'm a very curious person, so it comes very easy to me. But I've noticed that that's been one thing that's really helped me in my career, is when something new comes out, try not to judge it for being, you know, unnecessary or whatever, but be curious about it and look and see if it's something that can help you. I think that's the best advice that I can offer.
Tell us your favorite Microsoft application. You cannot say SharePoint. Is it something as simple as Planner or Loop, or is it Power Apps? What do you love using?
So I would say probably my second favorite, and I'll also take, you know, the Copilots and all that kind of stuff off the shelf. I think my favorite piece of Microsoft technology that I use every single day and couldn't live without is PowerShell. that is, and it seems so boring because it's like, oh, it's a command prompt, but I do so many fun things with PowerShell and kind of with that, a Visual Studio Code, you know, VS Code and PowerShell kind of go together pretty well. But I use that for all kinds of fun stuff. And I use it a lot for SharePointy things and M365 things, but I use it for, you know, like I'll give you an example. Shane and I and our families just went on vacation last week. And we used SharePoint to store all our pictures because, of course, we did. So I did the whole, you know, pick the folder, request file, and then people can upload files, but they can't see anybody else's files. Great functionality. When it uploads those files, it puts their name first, underscore, last, underscore, and then the file name. And all of the file names were the dates that the pictures were taken. So there were five of us uploading files. And I thought, it's not really that important that I know Shane uploaded a file or I uploaded a file. But wouldn't it be great if all the pictures were in chronological order, regardless of who took them, so that you can just, you know, sift through them and see all the different perspectives people had? And so that's just not an option with SharePoint. You can't configure how that name is. But I'm like, do I know a tool that will help me do the same thing a whole lot of times? So I could structure out what I wanted to do. I'm like, all right, so if I'm looking at this as everything separated by underscores, so I want to take position 1 and 2, I want to put it after 3 and 4, whatever. So I get into AI, I get into Visual Studio Code, and I start telling it the PowerShell code that I want, and poof, out pops PowerShell. And so I run the PowerShell, and now it's flipped all those names. So now all the pictures are sorted by time and date with the person who uploaded them at the end. And so now when you cycle through them, you can see, you know, like one of them is taking pictures on the beach, like taking family pictures. So one person was taking the picture and then I'm taking the picture of the person taking the picture. And so now they'll show up together as you're cycling through. So it's just, I use PowerShell for all kinds of things like that. Anytime there's something that's got an API that I can poke with REST, I use PowerShell for that. So I'm a big fan of PowerShell.
You're choosing the tool that, it, you know, that other people don't understand that makes you the special person.
Well, people have been calling me special for a long time, Dave. So yeah, that's not inaccurate. So with PowerShell, it's a funny story. So I, when SharePoint 2007 was out, I was running this environment, the one that I killed with the update. They let me keep my job. They're very gracious. But it was by you know, contemporary standards, it was really big. I had hundreds of site collections and thousands of webs, maybe tens of thousands of webs. And so I figured out very early on that I couldn't do everything with the UI because that just wasn't going to work. And I've been in the computer game long enough that command prompts didn't scare me. So SharePoint came with a tool, an admin tool called SDS-ADM. So I started using that when I needed to update packages or update web parts or do whatever. I started scripting it all with SDS-ADM. And the first, you know, big conference talk that I did was on SDS-ADM. The first chapter I wrote for a SharePoint book was on SDS-ADM, all that. Well, then we get our first look at the SharePoint 2010 beta. And I am like, I can make STS-ADM make me coffee in the morning, you know, make my bed, do whatever. I've got this thing figured out every which way. And they show us this new SharePoint beta and they're like, and we've got great news. We're getting rid of STS-ADM and everything's PowerShell. And I remember thinking, oh man, I'm not smart enough for PowerShell. It's got objects and pipelines. And I don't know what any of this stuff is. But I was forced to get involved with PowerShell, you know, 15 years ago. And it's been a great companion for me ever since. So just, you know, all the SharePoint things. And the other thing is, like I talked about how I used to do a lot of upgrades and migrations. There's a lot of problems you can solve with a well-honed script that will loop through everything, every site, every whatever, and do something, fix some past sin. And so it's been an invaluable tool.
Well, Todd, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been incredibly insightful to hear about your experiences and perspectives. We really appreciate you being here for this episode of Mastering Mondays.
Well, thanks for having me. Anything I can do to help those Monday blahs, I'm here for y'all.